Welcome back to the Free From Wall Street podcast. This is Steven Libman. I have a special replay of a podcast that we recorded with Will Smith, former NFL player, where we're talking about generational wealth creation through commercial real estate. And I just wanted to replay this for you guys because we dropped a lot of great topics in here, talking about how we went from zero to $100 million under management very quickly. So take a listen. Let me know what you think. And don't forget to go to integrityhg.com, sign up for the Investor Club so you can see all the deals that we have in our pipeline and what we have done in the past. Welcome to the Free From Wall Street podcast, where we share how we have done over $200 million in real estate deals to create, preserve, and pass on generational wealth without the roller coaster ride of the stock market. If you're ready to start investing with purpose, visit freefromwallstreet.com. But for now, let's dive into this episode.
Thank you for tuning in to the Generational Wealth to Commercial Real Estate Show. Got a very special guest lined up for you today. But before we get into the show, if you're watching this for the first time, do me a favor, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. And if you haven't left a review, please leave me a review. These reviews are how I keep bringing on rockstar guests. And, you know, it lets me see how I can keep getting better at doing podcasts. All right, that's enough with the housekeeping. Let's get to today's guest. Today's guest is Steven Libman. He is the managing partner with Integrity Holdings Group, a commercial real estate investment firm that is focused on creating stable, consistent, passive cash flow for their investors. As a managing partner, Steven focuses on investor relations, capital management, as well as collectively managing both asset management and property managers to ensure consistency of capital improvement plans in their execution alongside turnover and lease up management across the portfolio. He's based in New Jersey. Integrity Holdings Group has a national presence with a real estate portfolio value of almost $100 million. How you doing today, man? Thanks for coming on the show.
Good, Willie. That was a mouthful, man. Sorry about that.
It was, man, but it's cool, man. And now people see that you're just not some random guest I got on the show, but you're a heavy hitter in the space, man. So I don't mind.
Yeah, no. Well, thanks so much for having me on. You know, this is one of my favorite topics. I love the name of the podcast because the creation of generational wealth is, I mean, the Bible calls us to do it. Our families want us to do it. And it's something that I don't think we talk about enough on how to actually do that and execute on it. So it's one of my favorite topics ever since I started looking at it. So thanks again, man, for having me on.
Absolutely. You know, I'm excited to have you on the show because I've been following you on Instagram and LinkedIn for some time now, and you put out a lot of great content. So it's just it's an honor to have you on the show. So, I mean, tell the listeners, man, how did you get to where you're at now? You know, obviously you're on cloud nine, you're at the top of the mountain, so to speak, but you didn't start there. Tell us your story.
Yeah. So one of my favorite quotes is the man who was at the top of the mountain didn't land there. And, yeah, so we've been in business. We started Integrity Holdings Group about 11 years ago, and it started with I was a residential real estate agent, and then I was a residential real estate broker, and I was working with a lot of independent investors looking for flips, and that was right after the foreclosure crisis, so there's a lot of foreclosures around. So I was really good at hunting down good deals for them and getting them to the property, getting them under contract, and then watching them flip it and make a lot more money than I did on my commission.
And,
and I thought, you know, I think I could do this too. And my business partner and I decided to start Integrity Holdings Group. And we first started, we didn't have, you know, two nickels to rub together. So we first started as a wholesale business.
Yep.
And we were just looking to do some wholesales, which is, for those that don't know, you put a property under contract, you sell the rights to that contract, and somebody else goes and you make a small fee, sometimes a large fee, depending on how well you buy it.
Right.
So 2010, 11, we did our first deal. We made about $16,000 on our first wholesale project.
Yep.
And then we decided to quit our full-time jobs and say, hey, this is something that we can do. Hurricane Sandy hit in 2012. So the market kind of died off, and it was before we got any traction. So we started mucking out houses and pulling out wet sheetrock and wet insulation from underneath people's houses just to, you know, cause we refused to go back to that W-2 job.
Right.
And then the market started to come back. It actually created some opportunities through Sandy to get some subdivisions and some wholesales and things.
Yep.
But, you know, for the next 5 years, we really struggled to try to figure out how to make that business work. We weren't big podcast guys then.
Yeah.
And, you know, read a couple of books, but didn't have a lot of mentors around us that were doing big volume. So 2015, 16, we were doing maybe 15, 16 deals a year.
Yeah.
And Travis, my partner, called me from Home Depot, his third Home Depot run that day.
Yeah.
And said, man, there's got to be a better way. You know, we're never going to scale. We're working 12, 14 hours a day. And all we did was replace one job for another.
Right.
Right. I think we all read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and we're like, oh, real estate is a great opportunity to create generational wealth. But why isn't that happening for us yet 5 years in?
Yep.
And the truth was because we didn't know how to build a business. We just knew how to build a job. And that's,
yep.
Those are two different things. Started listening to some podcasts, listening to some people that were doing hundreds of deals a year.
Right.
And joined a mastermind with now some of our good friends and investors in the house flipping space, and learned how to scale and grow. And before we jumped on the call, we were talking about the Entrepreneur Operating System, the EOS system.
Yep.
That we started implementing, which was like Traction, Rocket Fuel, and how do we grow? How do we scale? How do we hire? How do we fire? How do we, you know, create core values and create a culture? And over that next year, we stubbed our toe a lot, but we grew from doing 16 deals to like 75 deals, and we broke $1 million.
Wow.
The year after that, and then the year after that, we broke like $3 million. We were doing 15 to 20 deals a month instead of 15 to 20 deals a year.
Good gracious.
And it was good, right? We started getting some traction. We started paying off some of the debts that we acquired by, you know, in the beginning of the business, trying to figure out how to learn and grow. And became solvent and realized, hey, you know, this is a transactional business. And it's not only transactional, but very highly taxed.
Right.
So when we started making money, we started realizing that Uncle Sam was our biggest partner.
Yeah.
And they were taking a big chunk out of everything that we were doing. So started looking at some other ways to diversify what we were doing. And we started thinking, well, hey, we're buying single family houses. Why don't we just buy some single families and hold them and rent them?
Yep.
And so we started switching to some buy and hold podcasts, some turnkey podcasts, some multifamily and commercial podcasts.
Yep.
And really just started doing research, like where do we want to put money that's going to give us the most bang for our buck and not be as transactional.
Right.
So doing some research, realized that owning single families and duplexes and triplexes was inadvertently going to create another job for us by property management.
Yep.
And those size deals don't really absorb the cost of third party management very well. If you have one of those types of assets, you're probably paying between 8% and 10% in property management fees. Otherwise you're swapping toilets yourself, right?
Yep.
So we decided, okay, we don't want to do that. You know, New Jersey is not a landlord friendly state. So we started looking at some different demographics. Where can we buy things with a decent price per door that was landlord friendly? God forbid somebody didn't pay their bills. And then we started getting around some guys that had $50, $100, $150 million under management. Every single one of us resonated and said the same thing, which was, don't go too small.
Right.
And, you know, I was curious, like, why not buy a 30 unit building? Seems like there's less competition in that space.
Yep.
And, you know, feels more manageable for a guy like me with the type of money that we have. And they said, no, look, you have economies of scale in these larger properties, and they can absorb more costs, and they can absorb third-party asset management, property management, things like that.
Yep.
So we said, okay, well, let's go find some operators in the space that we can go add value to. And we found our partner down in Orlando, his name is Sean, and he had a deal that he was just coming out of getting approvals for building a ground up self storage facility outside of Orlando in Davenport.
Yep.
It was 1,193 unit self storage complex, almost $12 million build out.
Wow.
And that was our first passive income project.
Shucks.
So we raised $4 million from private investors that wanted to come along for the ride with us. We had, you know, we have 10 years of experience in real estate, and then coupled that with Sean's $150 million of assets under management and, you know, thousands of units. it was great. It was a great partnership.
All right. So hold on. Let's pause right there for just a second. I really want the listeners to grab what you just said, because, you mean, you're saying some good stuff. So the first thing he did was he said, okay, I want to get out of what I'm doing now. And for you, that may be your day job, and you're trying to figure out how you can get into this space. He said, okay, how can I add value to somebody that's already doing what I want to do? So that was tip number one, nugget number one. And then the second thing was he leveraged that, you know, partner's experience to go out and raise money from, you know, people that he already knew and that trusted him from his prior track record. So, you know, keep going, man. I just wanted to really, you know, go on that.
Yeah. Point there. And what's good about that is, you know, we were flipping, so we were raising private money for flips. Right. And yep. It was a good way for our investors to diversify their portfolio as well.
Yeah.
So it was good for them. It was good for us. It was great for the sponsor. And the biggest benefit is we got paid to learn now. Right now right. We're in the deal. We're on the phone with the banks. We're seeing the architects. We're talking to the engineers. I mean, we're building 180,000 square feet.
Right.
Here. So it's like, you know, that's wow. A daunting task, but yeah, being able to walk the property and then all of a sudden see it on the time-lapse camera every week and seeing what the progress was. And
yep.
That one's open, by the way, and we're about 40% occupied at this point. We're leasing up very well there.
Yep.
And then that deal led to another deal. The guy across the street, we started right before we closed. He put a big sign up. It said 100,000 square feet of self-storage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the bank came back to us and said, hey, you know, this is a problem.
Right.
Now you have a lot of competition coming. We don't know when.
Yep.
So they wanted us to put another $1 million in escrow.
Mm.
And they thought the lease up time frame would be longer. So we went across the street and we bought that piece of land from the owner.
Oh, wow.
And we made a covered RV and boat storage, complimentary storage site right across the street from where we have. So
that just got the boss move
on that. It was, you know, it was one thing. It was $2.2 million purchase, and we were going to either have to give $1 million to the bank and deal with competition, or go with $2 million. And, you know, so now we'll be in it for about $4 million across the street.
Yep.
And it'll probably be worth about 7.5 when it's done, but it's a great compliment to what we're already building. So the first deal led to the second deal. Right away. And then the third deal, we built another self-storage facility on the other side of Orlando. It's another 130,000 square feet of rentable square footage. CubeSmart managed, they're a third-party manager there. Mm-hmm. And then since that, we've also contracted, so we own 66 units, student housing complex in Iowa is another 128 units. And we're actually under contract because of COVID. We've contracted 3 deals since February, haven't closed on any of them yet.
Wow.
So all 3 of those deals are closing over the next 45 days, 220 units, 84 units, and 120 units respectively. Yep. So that'll put another 424 units under our belt, and we're waiting on hearing on an LOI today, which would be a big one. So it's been an incredible 2 years. I mean, this is 2 years to put almost $100 million under management.
Wow.
And we've met some really great partners. We've learned a ton. And yeah, it was, you know, everybody says, how long did it take you to become an overnight success? It was about 11 years.
Yeah. No, that's great, man. So, wow, I didn't even realize it was over 2 years that you've grown your portfolio to, you know, where it's at now. You know, so when you first started out on this journey of scaling to larger properties, did you have the goal of say, all right, I want to have a, you know, 100 million, or did this kind of just organically happen over time?
Yeah. So the goal really was financial freedom, right? So how much do we need to put in the portfolio, and how much ownership do I need to have of all of these deals to create passive income that'll cover me and my partner and my chief operating officer, their salaries right across the board passively. Yeah.
Right.
And that's different for everybody, right? So whatever your monthly nut is, and you have to figure out what that is and then figure out how you can create that much in passive income. To me, that's financial freedom.
Yeah.
People talk, they throw that word around a lot. I don't know what it means. I mean, we're still, the interesting thing about building 3 ground up storage facilities is eventually it will throw off a lot of cash flow.
Yeah.
But it's like 3 years in the making until it does that.
Right.
So these are great projects, and you know, it helps you with your paper, like how you look on paper.
Yep.
Because it's appraised at X and you bought it at Y and you own a percentage of it. So your personal financial statement looks good, but it's not printing money yet.
Right? Yep.
It's not cash flowing yet. So, you know, that's part of the reason that we wanted to go to stabilized multifamily as well is, hey, these ground up construction hits are going to be nice, right? They're big dollar amounts, but the stabilized portfolio of multifamily is what's going to pay us every month.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's why we kind of have those two asset classes in our
portfolio. Yeah. No, I think it's a great mix. I mean, you think about it, you know, people always need somewhere to lay their head now. You know, you're going to always need housing. And then, you know, when the economy retracts, people are going to always need somewhere to go store their junk. Or as the economy expands and they buy more stuff, they got to store their older junk. So, you know, I think it's the best of both worlds, man, when you look at self-storage and multifamily.
Those two asset classes are the least volatile in the commercial space. So my podcast is called Free from Wall Street. So we're talking about the volatility of Wall Street a lot. And when my dad passed away, it was one of the downturns and he didn't get to ride the market all the way back up. So what he lost in his retirement account is gone forever because of volatility.
Yep.
So we like to look at things that are not volatile, and self-storage during the last downturn was the only asset class to actually increase in value year over year.
Yep.
And multifamily, if you looked at the 2008 statistics, 2007, 2008, the residential mortgage default rate was about 4.5%. That's what created this massive meltdown. Doesn't seem like a big number, right? But that's what did it.
Yep.
The multifamily space was 0.4% default rate.
Right.
It's because there was people moving from housing into apartments. Between 2008 and 2016, the average rental check went up by 22% during that same downturn. It's just supply and demand. So it's a very stable in comparison to other investment classes. And that's why we like those two, is because we're anti-volatility. And you know, even if there's less upside to be made, I like predictability in my retirement accounts.
Right. 100%.
Thank you so much for listening to the Free from Wall Street podcast. We're excited that you're listening and tuning in every week, but we want to have a two-way conversation with you, not just a one-way conversation. So go to integrityhg.com/webinar and join us on one of our weekly webinars where you can meet me, meet the team, have a conversation, and let's really talk about your investing goals and how we can help.
So what are you guys doing, or what is Integrity doing right now to find deals? How are you sourcing your opportunities that you're taking down right now?
So they've all been off market, relationship driven. Between us and our asset managers, we know a lot of people in the space and a lot of brokers. We've built good relationships. We've executed on some deals, which is really the biggest problem that we saw when we started looking for deals without a partner was, well, have you executed on a $10 million deal? Why would I trust you and my seller with giving you an opportunity if you haven't had any experience doing it?
Right.
And that was part of the reason that we created that partnership as well, was because we realized, you know, we haven't been underwritten by Fannie and Freddie yet, right? We don't have the financial statements to sign on an $8 million loan. We don't have, you know, so there's a couple of hurdles that exist that you have to figure out how to clear, because there's a pretty high barrier to entry. But once you do clear those barriers, then people know that you're serious in the space and they start bringing you deal flow. So it's just relationship like anything else. You know, we like the markets that we're in, and we're building relationships in other markets. And people give deals to who they know, like, and trust, similar to who gives you money. You know, it's great that you can have somebody that can bring you a deal, but if you can't work well with them through the 60 or 90 day process that it takes to get to the finish line on one of these deals, you likely don't want to work with them again. So, you know, it's just building those relationships and executing and letting your yes be yes and your no be no, and you know, just having integrity in the space.
Right. And you brought up a very good point there. And I talk about it all the time, is, you know, obviously I got the sports background, but teams, you know, you realize right up front that, you know, this is a team sport, and, you know, you needed to find somebody that had that experience. So it goes back to partner with somebody that had experience. So tell me, Matt, how did you identify this guy? Because I know there's a lot of people listening that was in your shoes, you know, 3-4 years ago, and they're there now. How do you go out and find somebody that has a track record that you could potentially partner with?
I mean, so again, it goes back to relationship, finding people that, you know, go out to these events and talk to people and meet people and just find out who kind of fits your core values and who you'd want to work with, and then see what they need. And if you think that you can help provide that, right? And that could be a variety of things. Maybe it's social media help. Maybe it's marketing. Maybe it's capital raising. Maybe it's asset management, property management, spreadsheets. I mean, there's so much that goes into this business, right? Just know what you're good at and then find the people that you kind of jive with and then say, hey, maybe there's a good opportunity here for us to work together. And, but it's face to face, right? You're not going to go on Facebook and go, hey, you know, or at least Zoom calls, right? You're going to have to meet people and kind of get a feel for them. Nobody is going to say, hey, I'm looking for a partner on this deal. And then they give you $5 million on Facebook, right? I think there's a big an ability to just stay online and think that because you're doing something, it's actionable, that you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have conversations with the right people. You have to go out to lunch. You have to sit and meet and talk with people, see what their long-term goals are. Do their goals align?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of just meeting people and knowing people and relationship building that goes along with that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's definitely great advice. Now, so you're buying multifamily and you're buying self-storage. So let's talk about both of those for a moment here. Self-storage wise, are you only doing new developments or will you buy an existing asset and just add value to it?
Yeah. So we've only done 3 ground up construction projects. And that's because our partner lives down in Orlando. He's finding these great pieces of property. It's the second fastest growing city in the country for the last 3 years. So it's there's opportunity there. That being said, you know, we haven't bought any existing ones that need a turnaround. Honestly, it's a little bit different of an animal. So I'm not sure that we would. I mean, you know, without another experienced partner in doing that,
right?
There's other people that are really good at doing that. We can do that with a multifamily asset, but an existing self-storage facility depends on a lot of different things, right? Like why is it not operating properly in the first place? You know, these things tend to do well without a ton of marketing. So is it just dirty or not clean or not safe or what? So I'm sure there's opportunity there. We haven't focused on it.
Yeah. Gotcha. Now, as far as, you know, when you guys are, your partner down there in Orlando is sourcing these different opportunities, do you guys get a feasibility study done on each site selection?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say it's one of, if not the most critical pieces of storage facility. So for those that don't know, a feasibility study is basically an appraisal that goes on a deep, deep dive of specific to self-storage, how many people are in the area and how much need is there for the size that you need to build, right? So even though we were approved for 180,000 square feet on the first build, we only built out 90,000 square feet.
Yep.
We built about half of it in phase one, and then we're going to lease it up and see how it goes because the feasibility consultant said we only really need about 130,000 square feet of need.
Right.
Well, that could change by the time we build phase one. It takes about 18 months and there's a lot of building going on, and feasibility consultants only do what's existing today, not what's under construction. So it's a little bit of a moving target, but you also don't know what new competition will come online and things like that. But you know, it costs somewhere between 15 and 20 grand for a feasibility study, but it gives you basically your chance of success, right? It's not the end all be all, but you know, the banks are going to want to see this. Your investors are going to want to see this. Because if you build 130,000 square feet of self-storage, but there's 7 other facilities that are 50% occupied in a, you know, couple mile radius.
That's not
a good place to put one.
Right.
So you just have to see, like, and that's what it is, right? Is it feasible to build? And it kind of gives you, you know, it's a little cheat sheet to say, yeah, this is a good project or this isn't a good project.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's, you'd be crazy to go out and, you know, spend millions of dollars on developing something and not spend the $20,000 up front to make sure that you're doing the right thing, you know.
100%. Yeah, because, you know, these are $10, $12 million projects, right, with $4 or $5 million in equity in them. So you want to make sure that it's going to be successful.
Right.
To the best of your ability, right? Nobody knows for sure, but you can take your best guess at it with all the education that you have.
Yeah, for sure. Now, most of my listeners, man, on this show is people that are investing in multifamily. And, you know, it's, you know, pretty easy to find, so, you know, property managers for that. You know, how do you guys go about getting, you know, the Cube Smarts and, you know, extra space? How do you, I guess, choose between the top ones out there? What's your, you know, I guess, decision criteria for, you know, your management companies?
So CubeSmart is the number one manager in Florida. They're the third largest in the country in terms of what they have under management. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know this, that CubeSmart actually owns about 75% of what they run, and about a quarter of their portfolio is just third-party management.
Oh, wow.
So CubeSmart is the biggest name in town in Florida, and that's why we chose them. And yeah, we also look at it as a little bit of an exit play, right? They're a real estate investment trust. They typically buy things for compressed cap rates that they know how they're operating. So to bring them in as a third party and let them do the lease up and see the financials and see what the day-to-day looks like, it gives us, I think, a higher propensity for takeout. Yeah. I know there's other guys that do it 100% the opposite way, right? So I don't think it's a right way or a wrong way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's you know, getting in touch with those guys and having them come down and look at the project and decide if they want to do it with you.
Yep.
Is it's good, and then you don't have to brand it. They already have the marketing machine in place, right? They have a well-known name.
Right.
And when you're driving through and you see CubeSmart, you kind of know it, even though they don't own it.
Right. For sure. No, that's definitely a good point. And then the last question around self-storage, what's typically the exit strategy for these ground-up developments?
So, I mean, for us, right, it's build them, get them stabilized, and then do a refinance, take the investors back out, give them their capital, let them roll into another project, and then we'll hold it long term.
Gotcha. All right, let's transition over to the multifamily space now. What do you look for as asset class, you know, unit count? What do you look for in a multifamily deal?
So we're looking for 100 units plus.
Yeah.
Stabilized cash flow with a value add, right? Some kind of upside to the property. So, you know, we want to be able to create value, whether that's mismanaged or just under market rents or, you know, any number of ways to add value to the net operating income over time is what we're looking for. We typically do two types of projects. And what we're under contract with right now is a great example of that. So we have an 84-unit project, 28 units are down. The bottom 14 on each building were flooded out, and the guy didn't want to spend the money to put them back together because he got into like a tiff with the township and they wanted him to do extra permits and things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, they we decided to go ahead and buy it, and it's a little bit heavy over lift. We have to do a bridge loan to a permanent loan because it's not stabilized.
Right.
But the other units are fully occupied. The other 56 units are fully occupied and they're cash flowing and they're about 30% below market rent. So the guy just has been owning this thing forever. And, but right across the street, there's a brand new Walmart. There's a brand new retail strip center right next door to it, all class A stuff. So, you know, it's in a great area and doesn't have the market rents that it needs. So that deal is a little bit heavy over lift, but it has more upside to it.
Right.
The other deal that we're buying right now in Texas, 120 units, it's very well stabilized. It's 96% occupied. It doesn't need a lot of CapEx renovation. There's about $100 to $120 a unit in upside rent to get it to market.
Yeah.
But that's going to take some time, right? People already live there. So it's not like we're going in and doing a heavy lift. And then, you know, so as people move out, we'll do a slight renovation. We'll increase the rents by $100 to $120 across the board. But it'll take 3 to 5 years to get all of that turned, to get it really stabilized to where we want it to be.
Right.
So I would say that those are like the bonds in our portfolio.
Yeah.
Strong cash flow, great area, $80,000 median income in a 1 mile radius. You know, so just really strong, stable, class B asset. Yep. And then the other one, like a heavier lift. So we like to diversify a little bit so we get those big pops at the end, but also know that we are buying consistent cash flow on the other side too.
Yeah. Now, are you guys structured as a one-off syndication for each deal, or do you have a fund?
We have not done a fund yet. We are doing it deal by deal right now. we are talking about the idea of a fund, just because we have more deal flow than we can take down ourselves right now. So I think, you know, maybe the future conversation will lead to a fund, but as of right now, it's deal by deal.
Gotcha. And then one other question around multifamily, as far as the underwriting, what are you guys underwriting now as far as considering COVID and how it's going to affect the markets? You know, what are you guys doing in your underwriting?
Yeah, so we're just shrinking back rental growth to either 0 or 1 or 2%, you know, depending on the market, right? DFW has been at like 7% for the last 5 years. We shrunk that back to like 2% rental growth.
Yep.
You know, so we're just being conservative in terms of what we think we're going to see. Nobody has a crystal ball, of course. The biggest thing, I think, not just in the underwriting, but in the due diligence process, is your lease audits. You're going in, you have to understand who that tenant base is. And that means looking at every single lease, every single credit score, every single employer, and figuring out what industries are they in?
Yeah.
Are they going to be affected long term? I mean, even these three deals that we're buying right now, I mean, 424 families, where do they work? What are they doing? What happens in the next 6 months? Are they in the hospitality industry? Are they in the retail industry?
Yeah.
You know, those two industries are getting beat up pretty good right now. So I don't think we've finished seeing the fallout there. So, you know, it's just really knowing your tenant base and figuring out how to underwrite that into, you know, secure yourself as best you can.
Absolutely. No, that's definitely great advice. All right, man, let's go ahead and segue to the last segment of the show. It's our lightning round. Got six good questions for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. What's the best advice you ever been given?
Don't reinvent the wheel, right? Find somebody that's doing what you want to do and just go find a mentor and learn from them. I mean, you know, the Bible says there's nothing new under the sun. And I think as entrepreneurs, sometimes we feel like we have to reinvent the wheel or create it from scratch. And there's people that have already done it bigger, faster, and probably better than you have. So, you know, go and find those people and learn from them.
Right. Absolutely. What's the best book you've read this year?
So, I mean, the Bible is always the top of my list because, you know, it's just infinite wisdom long term. Yeah. But if we want to talk more of a secular book, then I would say Never Split the Difference has been the best negotiation book that I've read.
Yeah. What's that? Steve Ross, Chris Voss?
Voss, Chris Voss.
Yeah, great book. What are some rituals that you have created that's making you a better investor or person?
So it's tough for me. If you know how the EOS system works and you have visionaries and you have operators.
Yeah.
I'm not an operator. I think the guys with like very consistent, regimented lives are probably more the operator type. The visionaries tend to be more, oh, there's a butterfly and follow it off. You know, I have, and I have three little kids. I have a 7-year-old, a 3-year-old, and an 11-month-old.
Yeah.
So the last year hasn't been great for, you know, waking up early at 5:30. It's kind of sleep when you can sleep. But I mean, the biggest ritual in my life has always been, you know, making sure that I shut down on Sunday. We don't work on Sunday. We go to church with the whole family. We spend family time all day together. My kids don't even question whether or not when the phone rings, I'm going to pick it up on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And it took a long time for me to get there, right? I didn't just start doing that when we started the business. It took me a long time to recognize that.
Yeah.
Hey, this is an important day in my life to make sure that I'm connecting with my family and things like that. And then the other piece of it is, again, related back to kids and family, is making sure that I'm home for dinner every night.
Right.
You know, so sometimes, of course, it happens, right? Yesterday I was in Atlanta meeting with an investor, so I flew out at 4 a.m. and I didn't get home until 10 p.m.
Yep.
But that's an anomaly, right? And the kids know that. But I think, you know, winning at this business thing and failing at your family is not something that I want to pursue. So we're making sure that we're putting those times in to make sure that we're together.
Absolutely. No, family is definitely important. All right. What is one thing you're doing right now to help you improve your business?
So we're doing a lot of process mapping, right? There's a lot of, new processes that come up in these deals that we're trying to figure out how to not stub our toe in the future on. So when you take down a contract, I mean, so you're finding a deal, right? You're underwriting a deal and then you put an LOI out. Okay. Right. So that's one process. The LOI gets accepted. How do you get it to a fully executed PSA? And I mean, we're doing literally touch by touch. Whose lane is it in the business? Who's responsible for it? Who's actually completing the task? And mapping it out all the way beginning to end. And then also investor, you know, first contact, second contact, third contact.
Right.
Investor onboarding. And we're creating steps to every single one of those processes that exist in the business.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Number five, if you can give your younger self one tip in regards to investing, what would that be?
Start sooner. I think everybody has the same advice too. I mean, it's, there's no, the best time to plant a tree is today. The best time to plant a tree was 25 years ago. The second best time is today.
Right.
We flipped a lot and it was just to create income and we didn't start investing that income until, you know, more recently, 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. So what we should have done is created a plan so that every flip, a percentage of those profits would have gotten invested into a longer term vehicle.
Right.
And I think a lot of flippers don't know is that by investing in these commercial deals, you can actually get massive tax depreciation and tax savings that'll offset the income that you're making from your flips. So I wish I knew that more, because in year five, instead of paying a bunch of your money in taxes, I could have taken a piece of that money and invested it, created some long-term wealth, and paid less in taxes.
Yep. So. Yep. Yeah. Now that's great advice. And, you know, people that are smart will listen. All right. Last question for you here. What is the worst job you ever had?
The worst job I ever had. So I don't know if it was the worst job, but it was certainly the most interesting. When I was 18, 19, putting myself through high school and the beginning of college, I worked doing removals for funeral homes. So funeral homes will often outsource the people that go to the house or go to the hospital to pick up bodies and bring them back to the funeral home. And, you know, so we had to go and, you know, if somebody died in their house, we put a suit and tie on at 3 o'clock in the morning. We'd go and pick up them, put them in a van and transport them back to the funeral home so that they could have the funeral done. It was certainly the most interesting. I mean, it was physically taxing, right?
Yep.
You never know who you're picking up. And it was all hours of the night and day. Right. And whenever the beeper went off, it was kind of like, you have 2 hours to go and do this.
Yeah. Yep.
But I'll tell you what, it was a really well paying job because not a lot of people want to do it. So that was certainly the most interesting job.
Yeah. 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 Well, hey, Steve, man, we appreciate you coming on the show. Tell my listeners, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah. So they can check me out on the Free From Wall Street podcast. And then if you want to go to our site and see our portfolio and learn a little bit about us, you can go to integrityhg.com. So the name of the company is Integrity Holdings Group, integrityhg.com. And then there's a contact button on there. If you want to learn more about, you know, our investments and things like that, you can reach out to us directly. Love to have a conversation and learn more about what they're looking for, what we're looking for. And again, like we talked about throughout the show, do interests align or is that your tribe, right? Are these your people that you want to work with? And,
right.
More often than not, people that reach out to us are. So,
yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Appreciate you coming on the show today, man.
Yeah. Thanks, Willie. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Free From Wall Street podcast. If you like what you hear, leave us a rating and review and let us know what you think.